You don't, oh, right, okay. Okay, thank you very much. We've changed over the CDs. Our next speaker is Mark Luck from North Somerset Council. Mark has worked for many years in town planning, specialising in urban design and building conservation, and I worked with Mark on a number of projects in Bristol, including the Bristol Legible City project. Mark's also worked on the big Broadmead redevelopment and on the redevelopment of the docks. Since moving to North Somerset in 2002, he's managed the urban design and conservation functions and secured a major programme, the Civic Pride Initiative, which is funding a number of public realm enhancement schemes, which Mark is going to be talking about. Mark will then also lead into the presentation by Jim this afternoon, as they both worked close together on the Knightstone Island Initiative. And maybe you'll have a chance to see the Knightstone Island as we did this morning, even if it was just from a distance. But Mark, thank you very much, and I look forward to your presentation.
As Andrew says, I've worked in the realm of sort of planning and urban design and have been for nearly 20 years now. I wanted to start off with a bit of an anecdote, actually, why I got interested in lighting and art and all the rest of it within the public realm. Back in the late 80s, I was involved in a number of actually public realm sort of schemes, primarily in sort of Bristol, and I got to fall out with the lighting section quite a lot, because I thought we did some perfectly good schemes which were ruined by engineers who came along and then lit those schemes afterwards. And in those days, urban design was, I think it was just sort of seen as a sort of planning, landscape design, architecture sort of function, and art, and actually art as well as lighting were things that was sort of done alongside, but you couldn't really collaborate with those things. They were done to you almost, and actually certainly lighting. And I think I was actually bemoaning this fact to a major supplier on the phone one day, saying how I just couldn't stand the fact that all these engineers came along and lit these things in ways that I didn't think was very appropriate. And about 3 days later, I was on a plane to Lyon. I was invited over by this manufacturer to go to Lyon, because the conversation went rather well. It's always good to talk nicely to people. And in Lyon, I was actually shown a number of examples of actually, at the time, this was about 1998, some quite revolutionary things. They were lighting public space, actually, but rather than light the space, they were lighting the surfaces. They were doing it all with hidden light sources. They were actually dimming lights after midnight to half the energy consumption, which they were doing on the motorways as well in France, and actually making huge sort of savings. And they were using light almost to paint sort of actually colours, and actually they were lighting the obstacle rather than lighting the whole sort of space, which made it safe to walk through that space. And I came back, I was working at Bristol at the time, came back with all these fantastic ideas about what we could do to our public spaces and bringing on engineers early into the process. And I was told, well, no, you can't do that. They use different laws in France, and the British standard won't allow you to actually cut energy consumption overnight. The British standard won't allow you to cut energy consumption on white light, because we see white light very differently. It's much brighter. And so therefore, when we lit sort of Broadmead in white light, we all had to walk around in sunglasses, because the perception of it was very, very bright, yet it was the same actually looks sort of level, but there was no British standard for white light. Those things are starting to catch up now, and I think that the latest sort of legislation is just actually bringing the UK back into line actually with other places. That said, I should now do my presentation. I wanted to look at, I just introduced a little bit about the Western Civic Pride Initiative, how we look at light, art and various other things as part of what is essentially a public realm scheme. That we're looking at in Weston-super-Mare, to revitalise the whole town, which hasn't had any investment in its public realm really for over 50 years. We put together the case that the public realm actually could help with inward investment, and that inward investment would follow on after we'd done the public realm. So really we were trying to raise the potential and actually reinforce the positive aspects of this town. The funding for the project has come through a partnership with the South West RDA, and we've now got a scheme that actually is funding 11 projects for the value of £11 million actually within Western Supermare, and that's over 5 years. And there are various legal caveats about actually getting investment in, but essentially that's what I'm going to be looking at here. Just a brief introduction to context and how we use the strategies. And I want to look at five schemes. And I'm not going to credit anybody in those particular schemes. And I want you to make up your mind, actually, whether you think it's artist-led, consultant-led, and all the rest of it. And we'll go back to them at the end and see if you're right. So hopefully that'll work out. Just in the context, it's core urban design sort of stuff, I suppose, in the way that we set it up. But we created a framework which was based on actually two simple concepts which I've used in Bristol and elsewhere. And it's really about place reference and that movement and information. And it's just those two things actually coming together which then inform a design process, a creative design process in everything we do. So first of all, we're looking at what the character of the areas are that make up the whole of Central Western. And the RDA asked me early on, what's the bench for Western Supermare you're going to use? And I think that's fairly typical. You don't use the same thing. And this endorses a creative approach for the space that you're working in, whether it's a contemporary space or an historic space. We looked at a movement sort of system as well. You can't invest everywhere. You need to prioritise. And the best thing to do is actually to prioritise on the areas where people want to walk and actually just sort of connect in. And that works during the day and at night as well. This is a very sort of brief introduction of this part of it, actually. We looked at key strategies as well to inform the design process, and the four key strategies were materials, lighting, wayfinding, and public art. I thought they were essential elements of the public realm, which often aren't embedded in those sort of design processes. In terms of materials, it was about lifetime costs, local sourcing. With light, we wanted actually to integrate the thinking on public lighting right at the start of the process. The same with wayfinding and the same with public art. Just to quickly look at the lighting strategy. The lighting strategy was really, I suppose, about a number of things. It had a townscape element to it, and we brought in a company called DPA Lighting, who are very creative in themselves, and they produced a lighting strategy which sat alongside the Western Civic Pride Initiative. And when we got the strategy, I sort of looked at it and thought, this is very good. I'm not sure how well it's going to go down actually with our lighting engineers, because it was endorsing a lot of things like calculating public routes by taking note of things like building lighting and amenity lighting and actually sort of creative lighting, which you need to do if these things are going to work in the nighttime environment. But these things are things that sort of street lighting engineers often don't take account of, and that's part of the problem. To my glad surprise, it went down extremely well actually in North Somerset, and I think that one of the strengths of what we're doing now is because we've got a lot of support of that particular team, and they do recognise actually that they want to move lighting forward. Perhaps it's because it's a seaside town and there's a tradition of that, but I think it's also areas that's exciting them. And I'll go on to some of the sustainability issues on that as well. The public art strategy that we evolved actually looked at putting art into the public realm, but at key points. It wasn't a percent for arts strategy. We didn't want to spend 1% of each of the project budgets on art if we didn't have a functional role for art, so we looked at where we were looking at it. I worked out that in the £11 million, that about £1.5 million of the earmarked money is going to creative lighting projects or art sort of projects. So it's not a percent for art, it's about 11% for art. But in terms of that's in the public realm, and that's actually where these things actually need to be and are emphasised. And if you flick between the two, you'll see that a lot of what we're seeing is actually the landmark sort of locations actually sort of crossed over with actually art and lighting. I think that gave people opportunities to look at the two things and integrate them together. What I wanted to do is just actually go through actually five examples actually that we've been working on or going through, and as I say, not really talk a lot about who's done them or where it's come from, but just actually look at the ideas actually for a little while and actually look through them and actually see how they've evolved. Big Lamp Corner and a scheme called Silica is the first one I want to look at, which is a space within the High Street town centre. And in Weston we have a high street that's not really connected to the seafront, and one of the issues that we wanted to do was we wanted to make those visual connections. Actually bring, in the winter we get a lot of people in the high street but not on the seafront, and in the summer it's the other way around, and actually people come to Weston seafront and say, I didn't even know there was a town centre near. So we wanted to make that visual connection and encourage people through. And the concept, I won't go into the process of it, but the concept actually that came out of the process that we did have was a very simple connection between the sand on the beach actually to the light emphasised in the place that was called Big Lamp Corner, and it was the connection between sand and glass and light which came through silica. And that was the project that came forward was to embody that concept actually within a vertical transition that started at the base of a tower, very much as a sort of echoing the textures of sand, and as we moved up it turned into glass and eventually sort of light. And it was this vertical transition which you could see from the seafront. The glass on the tower was in the form of, or is in the form of, about 4,000 glass sort of prisms, and this is one of the important things about the brief that we wrote, because we wanted it to be an energy efficient piece of work and it was going to be lit. So I'm racing through this a little bit, but I think I want to come back to them at the end and see how the process has worked. This is actually just silica as it is now, and this project is almost complete. We've got a little bit of snagging to do. And at night, this was at a carnival night, I think that you can see a little bit of the neon lights actually that they sell at carnival night. And this was actually a test for the lighting of the structure. And this is all of the lights actually that are on the actual spire, just to test them. We've had a bit of an issue at the moment because some of the councillors think this is how the structure ought to look, and the designer of the structure feels that it ought to be more subtle than that. In terms of energy efficiency, because of the prisms, we've actually got roughly 200 1-watt LEDs actually focused on the prisms, which actually create the light. And that's equivalent to two table lamps, is actually the way that we normally sort of describe it. So if you've got 200 watt bulbs, that is what's actually powering silica in terms of the nighttime lighting. It's also a scheme that puts lighting onto the structure. It doesn't emit any light at all. It's actually lighting the structure. This was something as well which has happened fairly recently at the Clifton Suspension Bridge, which was a project that I've been working on for quite a while as well, which was the previous lighting schemes all had light bulbs that emitted sort of light into the atmosphere. The current scheme actually points LED lights at the bridge, and so you see the bridge illuminated. You're not looking at the bulbs. And again, these are some of the sustainability issues that come out of this actually new technology, and actually some of the philosophies about how we do it. So I shall leave that one hanging a little bit at the moment for you to think about. What was the artist involvement? What was the engineer's involvement? Who was involved in that? And I want to look at another project which is implemented, which was lighting of the Playhouse. The initial design concept in the strategy was to light evening buildings, but not things like churches. It was to light buildings which had an evening function, such as theatres, cinemas, that sort of thing. So you're really using them as actually beacons in terms of actually drawing people to that activity. This was a simple concept that was initiated for lighting the Playhouse, which is just around the corner, the main theatre in Weston-super-Mare, which was simply to direct actually colour change LED technology against sort of DMX technology onto these I think they're actually fibre cement panels that are on the front of a 60s building. It looks fairly utilitarian during the day. It's just, it shows its age, but it's actually a fantastic sort of surface for bouncing light off. We did a little bit of an expression just to actually sell the idea to the people who worked in the playhouse themselves. This was actually just a function of doing it. And the piece is now actually lit, and these are examples of the colour changes that it goes actually through in the evening when there's activity on at the theatre. And actually from something which was a really dark hole in the street, it really is now the focus of the street. Again, I'm not going to explain how that process worked. We'll talk about it at the end. The third one that I want to look at is called... it's part of the whole Western Gateway project, which picks up all the roundabouts that come into Western on sort of Somerset Avenue. There's about 9 roundabouts. And specifically in the Civic Pride Scheme, we were looking at the roundabouts which were closest to the town centre. But it actually started the project out at the motorway with some of you may be familiar with Peter Freeman's Travelling Light at the motorway. Interesting sort of anecdote about this, I suppose. This was an art competition. I'm not actually trying to get you to guess any of this, a particular one, but we had actually 5 artists actually look at it. This was the only nighttime artwork, or the only lit artwork that we had in the competition, even though we set the competition up as a beacon. It was the only one that was actually came as light work. We had a consultation, public consultation, and the highways agency came in and said, we think they're all fantastic, apart from the lit one, which is going to obviously stop the traffic when it goes red on the motorway, and you couldn't possibly have that. So that sort of settled it for us, really. We thought, well, it's got to be that one then, hasn't it? So we worked with the Environment Agency. Actually, we worked with their agents. Agents of the Environment Agency are impossible to work with because, of course, they don't have any control. They're just actually advising in terms of other people. So they're very timid in what they actually approve. So we finally got up to the top of the highways agency and managed to see sense. But, of course, it doesn't change that quickly. So it's often green as well, actually. At the town centre, there was some gas works. There are some gas works. And so when we started to look at the concept and the strategy for Western Gateway, the urban side of it, images like this actually started to be put on the table, which was actually lighting things almost like a gas container, I suppose, and actually trying to create something sort of more urban, which could change over time. The designers who are looking at this particular project had started to look at a scheme which was based on reflectivity only, picking up on car headlamps, and so there wasn't any energy there at all. But I think that one of the things that was coming up was this was a fairly undynamic work, really, stand up against some of the other work that was coming forward actually for the town. They then looked at a scheme which was based on LEDs, LED columns, and the idea was this: it could project images, if you like, and as you came over a bridge and down into the town, that you would, at some point, you would see what those images were, and then as you moved around it, you'd actually lose it again in a mass of confusion. This didn't go down too well with our highway people. They thought that would cause a lot of crashes on the roundabout. So as these things actually often happen, the scheme actually started to develop. This is actually the latest actually sort of development. This is work in progress. And the designers are picking up, I suppose, on the pier as well, because the theme of this one, the theme of this particular roundabout, as you got closer to the town centre, it was meant to be that this was picking up the beach, whereas further out it was picking up some of the landscapes, and Travelling Light itself was meant to represent the region's sort of tradition for standing stones. It was a standing stone for the 21st century and a horological clock. So you got more and more sort of specific actually to the beach and the rest of it. So this was trying to lift up all of the LEDs, and it started to then actually interact with images of the legs of the pier, and the proposal is to do the legs in core 10 steel, and then all of the light work happens further up, which doesn't affect the traffic. Also, the light work has changed from a specific thing about images to more about actually moods, and the moods on this one are being linked into a weather station which will be housed actually within the centre of the roundabout, and that will affect what I think there are actually five actually different types of effect that you can do, sort of weather pressure or air pressure for the strength of the wind, and these will all be programmed to affect the colours of the LED, so you get these moods rather than a picture. I think it makes it quite a nice relationship with travelling light actually at both ends of the system, because they're both about moods and that feeling. Example four is Central Promenade. Whoops, I just jumped away there. That was... Oh, I'll jump back to it. It's on an automatic timer. The picture you almost saw was a picture of the festoons, actually. There's a long, typical sort of approach to promenade lighting, I suppose, in the 70s. So the festoons, as you can imagine, are very, very expensive, actually, to maintain. Lots of light bulbs, hundreds of light bulbs, in fact. They've got quite a short life. And when we started to look at a new concept for the promenade, it was a fairly easy jump, I think, to look at actually colour change, actually DMX and that sort of technology in order to inform and actually to entertain on that sort of process. There was also this issue that the promenade itself, being traditionally lit, wasn't a very safe place actually to walk at night. It was actually quite sort of dark on the promenade, and so there was this idea of lighting the pedestrian areas a little bit more with columns of light. So these sort of concepts actually started to evolve. The way that this has actually been developed is that the LEDs on the top have remained, but the need to light the highway has actually caused it can't be lit by a column of light, so it's moved actually to more traditional form of lighting on the column. One of the things about it though, we are introducing a thing called a leaf nut system, which allows us to dial up each of the columns or in groups to dim the lights actually right down, and it's something that's just come in this year that we're now allowed actually to do what they could do in France sort of 10 years ago, and that means if we've got an event on, we can raise the lighting levels, or particularly the police are interested when all the nightclubs come out, and we can also dim the levels. It also means that we can light the promenade more traditionally, but we can also drop those levels right down so that creative lighting on the promenade itself is much more explicit. And we're now starting to talk about areas like this as sort of being one lux, actually, which is, if it was in highway terms, it should be 15 lux. Actually, one lux is equivalent to a well-lit night with the moon, I suppose. That's considered to be one lux, and that allows your creative lighting actually to start actually to have a presence and actually start to work. And I think lighting engineers are starting to come around to these ideas, and they're starting to look at how creative lighting works. In terms of this one conceptually, there's a theme here about communication. Weston was the first place on the British mainland actually to have that part of the transatlantic cable as it landed on the beach. And so there's this whole thing about communication. I'll put a postcard up there as well, represents that communication. The finials, this is an early concept that we're talking about at the moment. The finials can have a relationship actually with sound. So if a car passes up the promenade, the intensity of the light on the finial will become brighter, so you can almost see that transition of vehicles moving along the promenade. Also, if you can imagine a fairly sort of stormy night with the sea, and you get that ebbing and flowing of the waves, and you get a slight intensification of the lights on the finials, which is about sound and communication and audible. There's been an issue though that this all happens quite high up, and it's wanting to do something actually further down for the pedestrian, and this is an idea that's coming forward, which is to look at actually having in the column sort of door to put actually a lighting panel in that, which then represents of a sort of actually letters of the Braille alphabet of visually, which is, I suppose, a sort of interesting concept in itself. But these will pulsate in terms of the Morse code. So if A is a dot and a dash, it will have a short burst and then a longer dash. And it will write, "Welcome to Western Supermed," one on each column, which is the traditional sort of postcard communication, if you like. So there's lots of ideas of actually communication, and that will give a very subtle lighting towards the promenade of these almost hidden meaning, allow people to find out about this Braille alphabet. So there's that one. Now, Lightstone Island, I'm actually not going to describe because Jim's here and I don't want to steal his thunder, but I just wanted a very, very, before we look at the credit list, Lightstone Island actually was, or is an island in Western Supermare that's actually been vacant for over 30 years now, and the listed buildings on the island were very much in a poor state. And this was really why I came to Western, and actually why the Most Civic Pride Initiative, because the scheme didn't work at all in terms of funding, and we needed to draw in public money. And drawing public money into Knightstone, we ended up having to have a whole programme of work, so I've now got 11 schemes rather than just one. That's actually an image of the housing and the mixed-use development that is the context actually of the Jimson presentation. You can see the impact on the island is visually is actually not too bad at all from the town centre. This was where we were in 2002. A lot of the councillors, actually, not just the leader of the council, were asking me to ask English Heritage if they could knock down all the buildings. I was conservation officer in Bristol as well, and they thought I had these sort of connections to come in, but I was left the next day, I think. But the scheme that we've come up with adds extra development, but it also has this whole sort of public realm coming back to the town, which Jim will talk about in a little while. But I think I'll just leave this actually when I won't talk about it too much. Just the credits then. Does anyone? I don't know if you want to do show of hands.
Yeah, why not? Let's go there.
So artist-led, engineer-led, or...?
Who thinks that was an artist-led project? Who thinks it was an engineering-led project? Who knew beforehand?
This one is artist-led. Although in saying that, I think one of the important points to recognise is that the artist didn't design the lighting for the spire. That was a collaborator who Wolfgang Buttress works with on nearly every scheme, actually, from London, a company called Gravity Design, and they actually design his lighting to his... comes out of conversations, I suppose, but the technical stuff, I mean, I think Wolfgang will admit he knows nothing about lighting. So he knows what he wants, but he doesn't know how to get there, and I think this actually demonstrates that collaborative working between artists and the light consultant, how that works. I think that's an important point when we start to set up issues about either or. I think it's a situation of actually both working together is much more important. If you go on to Grove Village then.
Okay. Who's artist-led on that one? Ooh. Engineering-led? Looks like the engineers have won on that one.
It's actually supplier-led. What happened actually on that one was actually that... as part of DPA's lighting consultant, in terms of actually developing the strategy, they came up with just this idea for the playhouse. I visualised it in order to just actually talk about the importance of light at a meeting once. And we were doing the scheme, and the intention was to leave this to an artist or to actually involve the artist. We had huge political pressure to go ahead with the scheme. And Urbis, who were doing the street lighting, liked the idea so much, they almost came and did it overnight, and actually nobody knew they were really doing it. I think this is a hugely missed opportunity. There's no meaning to the colour change. It could be if there was a comedy on, it went yellow or something, or if it was a tragedy, it went all spooky, I suppose, or something like that. Or it could be actually linked to laughter levels or audience, actually, all these sorts of things. And there just isn't anything there. And if you sit there for half an hour, it looks all right, but, I mean, there's no meaning to it. And I think that's again, looking at one of the things that artists actually do bring, actually, to that process, is that you can sometimes create the effect, actually, but you lose somewhere the emotion and the meaning of the whole of the whole opportunity. Western Gateway.
Is this artist or engineer or supplier?
Artist, engineer, supplier.
Oh, well, there's three choices now. Artist. Engineer. Supplier. Three for suppliers there. What's the answer?
It's actually engineer-led. Although in saying that, DPA Lighting, I think, are a very sort of creative practice. They do an awful lot of work with Peter Fink and Art to Architecture, and I know that they've done a lot of work on Peter's actually plans for Philadelphia. And I think that rubs off, and the point I was actually going to make there, when artists work with lighting engineers, or whenever you work with artists, I mean, I've worked with artists now for nearly 20 years, I think it just rubs off, you know. You start actually looking for the creativity in any project. We wanted to give actually DPA a project to do because of the work they'd done on the art sort of strategy, and we wanted them to look at a way of lighting the roundabout, and I think that they've sort of surpassed themselves, although in saying that, they hadn't got any reason for changing the lights or anything. That came from a conversation that which comes out of the sort of things I say on the Playhouse in terms of, well, why are we changing lights? And they came up with a weather station idea. So I think that's almost like a way that art's involvement comes through. The promenade there.
Is this the same three choices?
Yeah, same three choices.
Artist-led? Not at all. Engineer-led? Supplier-led?
Right. Well, you're all right in a way. I thought this looked pretty supplier-led because there was a lot of technical issues there, and we are working with Urbis sort of lighting. I added the bit about the communication last night, just as a bit of a just to try and fudge the issues. So that's not a project. So the communication thing isn't a project at all. That was just me on the kitchen table last night. But in terms of this sort of project, what we are trying to do, we are trying to make the space for art lighting to work, and although we haven't brought the artist in immediately, and we've got a brief actually for the artist to go out fairly soon, it's been part of a sea defence project which we've been working at now for about 4 years, and there's so many technical issues involved there with getting money. It's almost this sort of chicken-egg thing that always actually comes up. I think that with the work that we're doing on the rest of the strategy, I think everyone involved now is aware that we need to get the artist in, and I think that we're aware that we need to make the space for the artist, and we need to and respect that. So in terms of what we've got at the moment, I think we're quite happy to bend any way, actually, once that we start to look at ideas from artists on this particular project. So that's it, really.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mark. Thank you. We'll be coming back to the Nightstone Island project this afternoon, so perhaps any questions on that can wait to this afternoon. Are there any specific questions on Mark's presentation this morning? Yep. You get a chocolate, by the way.
Thank you very much. I'm Neil Blackmore from East Devon District Council. It's just really in particular to the one by the gateway. I'm sort of familiar with that. I've driven past today. But am I right in saying that that's a developer contribution paid for that entirely, possibly, and whether they were satisfied with the outcome themselves? What sort of feedback you got from that type of project?
It was funded through a Section 106, and it was we worked with the developer who... we set up the commissioning panel for the developer, with the developer on the commissioning panel. I think it was one of these things which we like to do, I suppose, actually, with sort of developers, to sort of actually try and educate them so the next time, actually, they'll do it themselves. The piece was... you could almost actually say one of the issues with that piece is it was almost sort of premature for the site. They had they had a that whole area of land by the motorway has been designed as an office environment, and they had a number of office tenants actually coming to the site. And what happened was that the artwork was on a time scale, so the artwork went in, but some of the tenants actually fell away because of other issues, and so they haven't actually progressed that office site. We've had a bit of a running battle with them because they caged it. That was the first thing they did. They put this fence around it, which was pretty awful. And but I think they almost actually, they're very proud of it, I think, actually, the development company. And they're almost like, they're afraid to let it go purely public because it's now their piece of art, so they put a big fence around it. But it's been called caged art, a lot of people say. And I also think that one of the issues of it is that we spent a lot of time actually trying to get the daytime impact of it right, and I'm not sure it is. I'm not sure it has that impact during the day. So.
Okay, I mean, it was just, it's nice to think that hopefully some of the developers will learn from that and educate themselves, as you say. I think that's a very important part of the process. Thank you.
Okay, sir. No more questions? Sorry. Okay. Well, I think we're up to time anyway, so we'll come back to some of these points this afternoon in the plenary session. Thank you very much, Mark. I'm just going to provide a brief summary. I think there are a number of issues which have come up this morning in the two excellent presentations that we've had, which will be explored a little more by Jim this afternoon, but also then by the panel and discussion with you. I think this whole issue about artists versus engineers, or is it either or both and, was one of the ones which comes up time and again. How you embed lighting into arts projects as well as into projects generally, like the Civic Pride project, is another. And third is how you manage that whole collaborative approach, the kind of skills that you need, the energy you need, and so on. A key issue for me which has come up as well is whether lighting is about events, or is it permanent, or is it both, and how artists can keep up with new technologies. There's a role for artists here in leading the work of developers and others and public servants and so on. And also critically working with those environmental considerations in mind. And finally, this whole issue about what adds value. You know, is it ideas based? Is it place reference, as Mark has talked about, and movement? Or is it crudely, as Oliver said at one point, a bit of slap? And I think those are the kind of things that we might want to explore a little bit in the plenary session this afternoon. We're going to break for lunch now. In discussion with the speakers and with the organisers, we're going to bring the second session forward slightly, so we expect to come back about 1:30. But that should still allow plenty of time for networking and discussion. The lunch is served, as I've said, out in the bar area. Please enjoy your lunch, but also please thank Mark now and Oliver as well for their presentation this morning.